This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and today's episode is the start of a short 3-episode look at vampire movies with a trio of lovely lady returning guests. On today's episode, Dawn of the Dead returns to talk about two of the most classic vampire films of the 80s, Fright Night and The Lost Boys. Welcome back to the show, Donna.
Woohoo! You know I love coming back here.
I love having you here. It's always so much having you. It's always so much fun having you on the show.
I can't help it. We get along pretty well. We don't always agree, but we do get along. So that's good,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. We were just talking off air about, you know, about movies that we like and have differing levels of like on these. So it'll be fun to, you know, see where we're at on these ones.
I think we're going to be pretty even keel on these. Maybe we won't, but I have a feeling we will. And I was so glad that you asked about these vampire films in the series, because man, the ones we're about to talk about are my favorites. They're like one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah. No, and these are like two of, like, I think both of these are arguably the most famous ones of the 80s. You know, everybody's got their own tastes on some of the other ones from the 80s, like Near Dark and you know, maybe some of the more comedic ones like Once Bitten or stuff like that.
Right.
But I think that these two were the big ones that people, you know, can't really argue about their status in terms of just influencing vampire culture, vampire movie culture from that point on as well. You know, it's they kind of changed the way people saw vampire movies after that point. You know, I would argue there's probably something earlier in the 80s that kind of changed it more from that gothic. I can't remember what it was, but you know, up until the 80s we got a lot of this, you know, overly gothic, you know,
like the Christopher Lee kind of,
yeah,
you know, they're wearing a cape and they're always living in
nothing
a castle,
really,
and
yeah, nothing really moved it up into the modern day until the 80s really. So, and even when they did bring Dracula into, like, you know, the modern day, like, you know, maybe something like with Blackula, or like, you know, the Jack Palance Dracula. Wait, was it Jack Palance?
Oh, I don't know if it was Jack Palance.
I could be wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of the Frank Langella.
Oh, Frank Langella. Yeah. Oh my gosh. How did I forget that? That's like one of my mom's favorite Draculas.
Yeah. You, so you're bringing Dracula up into the modern world, but you're still like, so it's, yes, it's still a modern setting, but you're still using old Dracula. So, you know, so it was cool with these movies to bring modern vampires
especially you know, like how you were saying, you know, the gothic ones, you know, they're usually like, you know, either very British or very regal acting, they've got capes, you know, they turn into bats. Salem's Lot was one that, you know, kind of creeped me out as a kid, and that kind of had the old Nosferatu you know, Barlow looking vampire. Just nothing as cool and as fun as these vampires. Like you said, it's the 80s, so they're very hip and they're very modern. And I always wondered why they didn't depict vampires as changing with the times, because they would never still kind of have that same old school look or mentality. They would have to upgrade a little bit, you know. So what was the first one we're talking about? Fright Night?
We're going to be talking about Fright Night first, yeah. Because that one came out in 1985. And I think that this one is... this one kind of continued to help mold things into what we get later on. You know, I think this one's still kind of in part, it still plays to the old sensibilities, because you do have, oh, what's his name?
What I like
The
is Chris Sarandon with the vampire allure. You still have that kind
Yes.
of old school stuff.
Yeah.
And then you also still have the familiar that's, doing all of his
Right.
bidding. I really like that aspect of it. And then we have the vampire hunter, obviously, Peter Vincent,
Yeah,
very
Peter Vincent, yeah.
loosely. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm saying. Like, we've got this kind of old school aesthetic in ways kind of clashing up against the new world of the 80s. And this is what's interesting about the 80s. When people think about the 80s, we think about the kind of neon and big hair and everything that kind of went along with certain aspects of the 80s. But a lot
Right.
of that didn't happen until the late 80s.
Right.
And we're going to kind of get into that with Lost Boys, because that's when we look at Lost Boys, that's kind of how I feel like people look at the 80s,
People just
is
assume
the
the 80s
aesthetic.
was completely like Lost Boys, and
It
it
was,
was not.
yeah, exactly. And it was not at all. And you go back and look at these movies and you can see that it was not. A lot of that 70s kind of era look to clothes and everything else permeated through a good portion of up until the mid 80s. And you even get that feeling here in Fright Night in 1985. I mean, Brewster's still wearing like sport coats and stuff, you know. It's like, why is he wearing clothes like that? I get he's a nerd, but like,
But he's dressing like he's somebody's dad that's about to give a lecture. I don't know what's going on there. Like, no rock t-shirts can be found, barely any. His room really didn't look like a teenager's room. I was kind of like,
Oh yeah.
I don't understand any of,
Especially
I had like.
a guy who's supposed to be a horror fan,
Right, you would think he would have like horror posters. I mean, me myself personally, because I was a Prince fan, I had Prince posters. I had horror posters, but I had Prince posters too. There's nothing. He's like a 35-year-old
It'll
teenager, and
shock nobody in the, it'll shock nobody in my audience to know that I had an Elvira poster on my wall as a teenager. So
I'm pretty sure we all know that you had probably more than one Elvira poster. But it is interesting, with Fright Night. It's like you said, it's got the old aesthetics, the like all of the tropes that we're kind of familiar with and
right.
turned on a little modern spin. And Tom Holland
Exactly.
did such a great job of directing this film, because
Oh,
really
yeah.
it's kind of like The Boy Who Cried Wolf, like, oh, he's a vampire. My neighbor's a vampire. Nobody's gonna believe you, dude. Are you serious right now? Why would you assume that he's a vampire? And I just love how in these movies the teenagers, either that we never see their parents, just like Peanuts, their
Right.
parents don't exist, or their parents are completely oblivious. Like Charlie's mom is just, she's single and she just knows that, there's some good looking dudes that move next door. She don't give a
Yeah.
shit whether he's a
Oh,
vampire.
she's totally smitten with Chris Sarandon's vampire character. Oh man, it's so funny.
It's cute. Yeah, it's really
Yeah.
cute. And then we do have to throw in the fact that we have kind of a neat little, also in the vampire, in that Bram Stoker old or vein, where Jerry Dandridge has a kind of a lost love in Amy, who is Charlie's girlfriend. He's got the picture of his old love, who just happens to look like this modern girl that our hero is dating. And I thought that was kind of neat that they kind of
Yeah.
threw that back in there, like, oh, she might be a reincarnation or of some
Right.
form of this woman that he was in love with. And it kind of gives him almost a romantic edge, while he's
Right.
nibbling on ladies of the night throughout this movie. It's kind of like, oh, he is kind of romantic, I guess. He's now,
Yeah.
fallen in love with this girl that resembles his lost love.
Yeah. And apparently that was a Chris Sarandon suggestion as well.
I could
So
totally see that.
he suggested giving that some extra backstory to why, and give it some romanticism that wasn't there in the original script. Yeah. So it's yeah, no, this is it's a really interesting movie because it's got a lot of that throwback vampire stuff. It's got a throwback look to it, but while also pushing things into the 80s, you get that whole club sequence that's very 80s, very mid 80s anyway. And you know, very, you know, very romantic, with the tinge of sexuality in it. It's not very sexual, but this movie does have some sexuality running through it, which is interesting as well. Which is good because, you know, vampires, we've always associated vampires with this romanticism and this sexuality as well, especially in later years. But it's so it was interesting to see them incorporate that into the narrative,
Well, I mean,
with all that.
we always get the you know, with slasher films, it's always that, oh, you shouldn't have sex because once you do that, premarital sex means you're gonna die. And with vampire movies, it's always very erotic, very liberating, you know, just the whole scene between him and Amy, like you said, with them dancing in the nightclub, and it's like really seductive. When she goes in there, she's very kind of virginal, and then somewhere through the course of that dance scene, you know, her collar's up, her hair's different, she's kind of matured, and you can tell she's seducing him as much as he's seducing her. But I also like the fact that at the beginning of the movie, you know, Charlie's trying to get some, and she's just like, no, I'm not doing it, you know. And it's this that sexual tension, and then we get that again between her and Jerry Dandridge. So when they finally, spoiler alert, when they finally get back to Jerry's place, and you know, he's got her in the little in front of the fireplace, which is, we all know, when they're in front of the fireplace is some bow chicka wow wow about to go down. And then, you know, he's biting her, and she's making all of these kind of sexual moans. Like, I'm like, dang, this is, you know, as a teenager, I was like, holy crap. They do this? Is this like, if this is this normal? So they're not gonna have sex. This is what happens when they bite you. And I thought that was kind of neat in a weird, you know, sexual way. Because as a teenager, would you say this came out in 85? So I was like 14
85,
watching this. Probably shouldn't have been watching this. But I mean, I had cable in
I
my
was,
room. I was watching
yeah.
everything at that point. I was watching Skinamax at that point, you know what I mean? But to see it portrayed that way, it wasn't, like you said, it's not a whole lot of sex, but the
No.
sexual overtones are there. Her moaning
Yes.
in ecstasy is there, the blood dripping down, like it, as if she'd had her hymen, you know, like it's all of it was there if you really, really looked at it. And
Well,
I thought it was kind of groundbreaking to see it in that kind of sexual way. You know, we always see them go in for the kill, go in and bite the lady, and then her face is kind of pained, and hers was kind of pained, but it was also kind of like, okay, this is kind of hot.
Well,
If I'm
they've always
making any
said
sense.
no, and they've always said that like the act of the vampire biting, you know, because it's an act of penetration, that is, and that's why they've always had that look of ecstatic pain. And so it is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for that loss of innocence. And you know, very much so in regards to this movie, especially because you know, you do have her, you know, in the beginning, she's, you know, resisting Charlie, but then
Completely frigid. Yeah, she does
well,
not
but
want to
then
go there.
she is about to give in to him, and you know, and then he sees Jerry across the way and gets distracted, and then so she gets mad and leaves. But you know, it's but later on, once Jerry has influenced her and you know used his you know vampiric mind control on her, that you know she you know, gets pulled into his seductive ways, that you know she does lose that innocence, and things change. That's when you see her later on in the movie, Her
Her
she's
hair's all
in the
long and she's
doorway, her
got
hair's long, she's got the
the white
see-through
lingerie
dress.
on.
Yeah. And
It's like
it's
he's
so funny too
transformed her,
because
and in both ways he's transformed her. He's made her a woman and he's made her a vampire. It's like, wow, you just got two for one. Okay.
And it's funny too because apparently she had they had prosthetic breasts made for her for when for her after she's been changed into the vampire. And so, you know, because becoming a vampire, you know, changes you so dramatically that you get bigger breasts.
Right, of
But
course.
Amanda Bears, she has taken those the fake breasts with her to conventions and lets people touch them when she's signing stuff for them.
That's so cool.
Right? It's so
That sounds like something
funny.
I would totally do. I would totally just $5 to feel my tits. Here you go. I totally would do that. That's amazing. And I don't know. I really do like that whole transformation. I mean, I think there are very few vampire scenes when they're actually, sinking their fangs in that stand out to me. That was one, and obviously in my formative years, that was definitely one that I was just like, what? This happened? Does this really happen? And then later on, when I watched John Carpenter's Vampires, and of course he, bit her down south, and I was like, wow, this is nice. I've never seen this. This is interesting.
Well, we already got that in the 80s as well too, because in the movie Once Bitten,
Oh yeah, I
the
keep forgetting about
vampire,
that movie.
she's a lot of people forget about that movie. But yeah, no, they you know, she's the vampire in that one's a woman, and she's biting in this case Jim Carrey of
Jim
all people.
Carrey.
She's biting him on the inner thigh as well. So
I
yeah,
would just think more blood would, I mean, your
yeah.
neck, your jugular has probably got a lot more, but still, that's kind of, it's nice. It's a nice little touch there, that most people don't think of. So what else am I forgetting about this movie? Oh, so Evil Ed. So
Yes, the
the
classic Evil
character,
Ed.
what is it, Stephen Jeffries?
Stephen Jeffries, yeah.
Yeah, Evil Ed, most probably my second most annoying horror character. And I know it's only because of that voice and that laugh. And I hated this kid when I first watched this movie. I really just did not understand the purpose of this character. But then we get, later on we get to see, well, he's a nerd and he's a dork and nobody really likes him. And that's also a way for Jerry to kind of have more
To
people
get
in
his
his
hooks into
fold.
him.
Yeah, because it's like nobody respects you, nobody cares about you. You can be a part of this.
Now I
Well,
can give
who's
you
gonna say
power
no?
over them.
Yeah, who's gonna say no to that?
Right? Like I was a nerdy kid. I would have taken that up in the first, I would have taken that up immediately. Like, okay, I can
Trust
have power
me,
over everybody.
I know. People that
I
talk
would
to
become a
me.
vampire now. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if I would do it now. My body's in a craptacular state right now. Now, if
Well,
it's
I'm
going to
just saying,
repair
like,
all of the stuff, then yes, I will totally do that. Anybody that's a vampire that's listening, sign me up. That's all I'm saying.
right?
But
I personally, I want to live forever. Like, I still have tons of stuff I want to do in my life.
this is true. We've had this discussion before. But yes, I
that's
would
the only
totally
reason
sign
why.
up for it. I too was a dork. I know people. Well, it should come apparent that I'm still a dork. But I wore glasses. I was the mousy girl. Nobody hit on me. When I say nobody hit on me, nobody hit on me. So of course, at that point, I probably would have been that way too. I'd have been like, yeah, why not? But you end up feeling so bad for him. Like I went from hating this kid in this movie to feeling terrible, after he gets turned and then he goes to Peter Vincent, which that is such a great name to mash those horror legends together. And then Peter Vincent has to, take care of this kid and take him out, and then he's just kind of dying. And even Peter Vincent
It
felt
like
so,
feels like a 15-minute long death scene.
oh
It
my
is
God, it's
so and it's
brutal.
excruciatingly long. It's ridiculous.
It is so sad, though. I felt
It is
so
sad.
bad for
But
this
you know
kid.
at the end he's alive, so you know it's
That's true. That is true.
Exactly. So, I mean, as much as it's like they do that whole thing, like they undercut it at the end by like, oh, well, he's still alive,
It does
so,
go on in
and
incredibly long now that
it was. I was just like, I was watching it the other day, prepping for this, and I was just like, oh my God, why is
a
this
10
taking so
minute death
long?
scene.
Well, because he was like, so because they were showing, like, obviously they were doing it because
All of
they
the
wanted to show
effects.
all the effects and everything,
Right.
and they didn't do the buildup of him becoming the wolf, and
Right. We
so
wanted to
they
see the
did it in
reverse.
reverse
I
instead,
kind of liked
which was
that though.
unique. No, it was
Yeah.
unique, instead of how they normally would have done it. So yeah, no, it that part was good. It just seemed to take it seemed to go on for so long, and
Yeah.
like they just it was just yeah, no, it was just like I was looking at my watch. I was like, how long is this gonna take?
To wrap it up,
I
wrap
did
the
like
death scene up.
the effects though. It was really good effects. For something like that in the mid 80s, that's anybody talks about practical effects, the 80s were the fucking renaissance for that shit.
Yeah,
Like
to this
everything
day,
was
it's
so
like the
good.
best. Everything was
Yeah.
practical and everything was gory and gross, and I loved it. And
Yeah.
I'm glad that some horror directors are now going back in that
Going back to
direction because
that, yeah.
CGI is good and I get it, but I need to see all of the gloop and the gore. I want to see all of that stuff.
Right.
So, but yeah, everything about this is great. Even the inside of Jerry Dandridge's home, he's living in a suburban house just like everybody else, but when you go inside, it looks like a palatial castle.
It
I want to know
does.
where this neighborhood is because I need to buy this house.
It's that is very funny. I had thought about that until you mentioned it. But yeah, on the outside, it just looks like a normal everyday house. But as soon as you get inside, it does look like something. And it was meant to look like, kind of similar to the house in Salem's Lot.
Right. Yeah. It, I mean,
With the
down to the
big
stained glass
staircase and
windows,
everything.
and
Yeah.
man, it's like, that house was top tier. Like, what neighborhood is this, sir? I need to know. I need answers. Because you go in Charlie's house and it's just like a regular standard run-of-the-mill craptastic, 3-bedroom, whatever. This man's got like, a basement and, stairs that look like they belong on a castle. It's like the best
Yeah.
house ever.
The best
Despite the
house for a
vampire living
vampire.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
And then also, oh, go ahead.
yeah, go ahead. No, you go.
I was just gonna say, I also love the touch that Sarandon did add a lot of really good touches to this, with Jerry always eating the fruit because
Yes.
he deduced that he was a fruit bat. So I thought that was kind of cute. He takes a bite of the apple and it's like the huge whole side of the apple is gone when he kicks it over to
Right.
Charlie. And I thought, damn, that is so cute and clever. I would have never associated him with that. Bats, we just think bats. We don't think fruit bat
Right.
or a specific type. Kudos to him on that.
Yeah, and that was something that like I like with both of these movies too. Like you actually see the vampires eating food. Which is something like it seems like in recent years they kind of push away from that, like, oh,
Yeah, like they
vampires
can't
can't eat real
consume it.
food.
Right.
They can only consume blood and everything. It's like, why? Why couldn't they eat food? So,
It would seem like, especially if you're going out at night, if if he's on a date or something, he's got to act like he can eat. So he would have to be able to
exactly.
consume food.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah, that's one of the weird tropes that has come out, like, I'm not sure when it started. It may
I
have
feel
started
like
even
True
before these
Blood
movies,
started
but
that. I think True Blood like
yeah.
really solidified that too, because it's like they can't eat anything. Like, why?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a digestive
Oh, True
system,
Blood.
sir. I
Yeah.
don't get me started on that. That would be a whole nother spiel I can't get into. But
Yeah. I hate watch that show.
yeah, I do too.
Because I got to get into it real quick, real briefly, because that show, like, you would watch most of the episode and you were just like, why am I watching this show? I do not like this show. And then they'd have one or two moments towards the end and you're like, oh my God, this is the best show ever. And so you'd get sucked back in for the next episode. And then like seriously, like two-thirds of the episode, you're going, why am I watching this
It's
piece of
like a
crap?
terrible soap opera. You know it's
Yes.
not worth anything, but you can't stop watching. I feel exactly this. It's
The only
terrible.
things,
It's terrible.
the only people I really liked in it were Eric and Pam. So that's,
Oh, those are the best. And Lafayette.
right?
Oh my gosh. Don't even
Lafayette
get me
too. Yeah.
started.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Anyway,
what else
this is
can we
not a True
say
Blood
about,
episode.
I know, let's focus. Focus.
But no, okay. So I did want to get into the fact that both, like, so I understand it's hard to get real teenagers when you're doing these movies because of limitations. They can only work so
The
long
time,
and
yeah.
such. And I get it. So it makes it difficult to get real teenagers. But when you're getting your lead is 24 and his love interest is 27 at the time. And I'm sorry, but people in the 80s, they did not, you look at kids today who are in their 20s and they still can pass for being in their teens for
Yeah.
the most part. Not everybody, but for the most part, they can. Kids in the young adults in the 80s, people in their 20, 20s could not pass for teenagers. You look at
Nah.
teenagers from the 80s and they look like goddamn adults.
Only have a way to
So
get a mortgage.
we in the 80s, I'm gonna you look at Wilford Brimley in stupid, like in The Thing. We know this. That dude was like 40 at the
Yeah,
time, and
that's a
he looked
hard
like he was
40.
in his 60s. All right. We are you and I'm almost 50, you're over 50. We look younger than Wilford Brimley did in The Thing.
Yeah, man.
So
I don't get it. I know it was a lot of
I
the
don't know what it
Aquanet
was.
and
The 80s
makeup
were a
and
hard decade.
maybe because we were going through like, possible Cold War stuff. I don't
Yeah.
know, but it was not a good, I mean, it was not friendly, face friendly. At
No.
all. I'm so glad we
No,
did not
no.
have
I think
social media because nobody knows what I look like back
Oh my God. I mean, and again, I think this is why by the late 80s things kind of changed in
Right.
terms of the look and the aesthetic and hair and makeup and stuff like that. People started transitioning towards and it didn't really help because the everybody still looked old. They just looked old and made up. I literally saw a video recently. Somebody showed a video of it was somebody who'd recorded like a class. They were just kind of panning over a class. And I think it was in the late 80s. And like literally every kid, it was a high school classroom. Every kid in that classroom looked like they were in their 30s. It was
Wow.
ridiculous how bad, like how old all of them looked. It was just like,
Yeah, I
I
can't
couldn't believe.
explain it. I really can't explain it, but
Yeah.
everybody did look like they were, in their 30s. And it's funny. That's always one of my complaints when I watch movies from the 80s. It's like, 35-year-old teenager,
Yeah. Yeah.
at least try to find smaller people. At least Stephen Geffries kind of looked like he might
Yeah,
have been a
he looked like
teenager
he was in yeah, he
because he
looked
was
like he was in
small and
school.
kind of
Yeah.
dorky looking. So he looks like he might have, he could have passed. But
But
yeah,
both
no,
Charlie
Amy
and
and
Amy,
Charlie,
they looked like
no.
they were in their 20s.
No.
Like they acted like they were in their 20s. Everything about them screamed 20s, mid 20s at that.
Yeah, and then they
You
put like
know.
this little kind of bow headband thing on her, like we're supposed to believe
Yeah.
she's a 16-year-old.
But
No,
meanwhile, he's
you're
still
not.
wearing sport coats and shit,
And
and like he's like,
why? Why?
dude looks like he works in a bank. You know,
Like
come on, man.
I mean, no band t-shirts, no movie t-shirts, no movie posters, no music
No.
poster. There's nothing that resembles a teenager's room other than it being messy. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
No,
don't get
is
it.
that was what was killing me the whole time too. It was just like these guys do not look like teenagers at all. And that's what cracks me up about the difference between this and Lost Boys, which Lost Boys comes out only 2 years later in 1987, and they actually got teenagers for that movie. So it's just wild. But yeah, no, they this This movie's a lot of fun. This is Tom Holland's, not to be confused with modern day actor Tom Holland.
Right.
This is a writer director from the 80s, Tom Holland, who did who would go on after this to make the first Child's Play movie, also with Chris Sarandon. They had such a good working relationship on this on this movie that they moved it into doing Child's Play together. But yeah, no, this was his directorial debut. He'd written a bunch of other movies, including Cloak and Dagger, which was a personal fave of mine in the 80s. I really liked Cloak and Dagger for some reason. I don't remember why. But I really liked it. Let's see. I was just looking at his stuff. He also did he also wrote Class of 1984 and Psycho 2, which was the movie
I
that brought
actually like
back
Psycho too.
yeah, it's the movie that brought Anthony Perkins back to Norman Bates. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, no, he but yeah, he I guess he'd written a movie called Scream for Help, and he did not like how that was made or anything, and how they butchered his script. So when he was finally got the chance, he was like, "Look, I'm finally going to direct one of my own scripts," and he directed Fright Night. So, which is great, you know. It's you know, as much as it sounds like we're complaining about the movie,
Oh
and
no,
I
I
don't think we've been
absolutely love
complaining
it.
about it too much. I love the movie. Yeah, you know, and
I
I
can trash a movie all day long and still love it. I mean, it's definitely,
exactly.
like you said, it's one of the most memorable vampire movies of the
Yeah.
80s. There's a reason that everybody loved Fright Night. I don't know how you feel
Yeah.
about Fright Night 2. I think that's okay, but
I haven't seen it. I don't think I probably saw it sometime in the 80s, just like I saw this one, but I didn't even remember this one that much. I remembered it a little bit. This one was one of those ones that I hadn't seen. I watched it a few years ago, but prior to that, I hadn't seen it since the 80s.
Right. I mean,
So
it's kind of like what you said. It's got everything that you need. It's got the regular type of vampire archetype set up. You know, the whole good versus evil thing, the reluctant vampire hunter in this one. I
reluctant
mean, like,
yeah,
he's
no,
definitely
and
not trying to go in there.
that's a great aspect of it too, is because we haven't really talked about that. Roddy McDowall playing Peter Vincent, you know, he's such a good character in this guy who plays this vampire killer, but you know, when presented with the real thing, is very cowardly. I mean, and kind of rightfully so, though. Like, who of us could say that, like, you know, sure, we could be brave on screen, but you know, when presented with a real life vampire, I'd be booking it out of town too.
Yeah, I don't blame him one bit. And it's so funny too, because at the beginning of the movie, you know, clearly Charlie's a fan and it's on that channel, and we even get a clip where we see him in one of his movies and he's holding the steak wrong, and I'm like, do y'all not see the how this is just a movie, right? And so when he goes and he, you know, confronts this man, you know, tells him, oh, well, there's a real vampire. What did you really expect him to do? He's a movie actor. It's not like this is a real occupation here, you know, which is a little different, not to get off track, but it's a little different in the Fright Night remake, you know, that Peter Vincent actually has some kind of experience dealing with vampires. I thought that was kind of a neat touch, but this man literally is on public access, you know, showing his movies and being the host of horror movies, and you really want him to deal with a real life situation. Once again, like you, I'd be booking it out of town. I wouldn't even be trying to help this kid. And then there's money involved, and he's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, I'll do it. You know, it'll just be for show or whatever." Fright Night 2 is very pale. It's in the shadow of this one. It's fun, and I have fun watching it, mostly because Julie Carmen is in it, and she's gorgeous. But really, there's nothing memorable, and there's a little bit more. We've got werewolves in that one, and more familiars, and you know, things like that. But this one for me was just outstanding, and Chris Sarandon is just so charismatic and so cheesy and smarmy, you know, like when he's
Yeah.
in the house, you know, and then Charlie comes in and he's just sitting there chilling in his mom's living room, and she's like, "Oh, well, I'll come over as much as I want with your mom's permission, of course." It's
Yeah.
like, dude, he's already in your house now. This is over for you. It's curtains. And here's the thing that really irritates me, and then once again, like you said, I love the movie, but here's the thing that really kind of sticks
Right.
in my craw. Jerry comes to him and he basically tells him, if you keep your mouth shut, you don't have to worry about me. Because I'm
Yeah.
assuming he's going to stay in town for a little, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, eat a couple people, and then move on about his merry way. All you have to do is lay low, let him do what he's doing, mind your business, and then he'll leave. Just
Yeah.
don't even get involved. But because it's Charlie, he's like, no. Just like, why? Why are you even bothering this man? He's not bothering you. He doesn't want to eat your mom. You know, might own your
Yeah.
girlfriend, but you know, you can get another girlfriend. You're a teenager. I don't know. That always bothered me. I was like, he came to you bargaining. This is a vampire. This is an undead person who's been alive longer than you, or not alive longer than you. And he's actually giving you an out, and you won't take it. And I thought, oh, you idiot. You just straight up idiot.
Yeah, like and that's the thing. Up until he meets Amy, like he wasn't messing with him. He was just
Right.
like, dude, just let me be me, let me do my thing. And I get it. Like I get it. I might have like qualms about that as well. Like I'd be like, I don't know, man. Somebody's got to know there's a vampire here. But I think I'd do it a little bit less fucking like histrionic than what
Right, like
Charlie
be
was doing.
discreet, dude. You just he brings
Yeah.
the cops to the house. The guy that's there with them is just, you know, making him look like a complete idiot, and he's
Yeah.
just like, there's a better way to go about this, sir. Having said that, I still think it's like one of the best vampire movies. I watch it
Oh, yeah.
routinely all the time. We quote stuff from this movie all the time. It's just little things that you never really saw before in vampire movies. I love the fact that they did in this one, such as
Yeah.
holding up the cross doesn't do diddly squat unless you're
Yeah.
really truly believing in this cross that you're holding.
Right.
Never saw that before. You know, we saw all these other movies, they're just holding up the cross and the vampire automatically shrieks or runs away or whatever.
Right. And it's like,
And
why does that matter? Like,
right,
so like, what
it's
if the
so
vampire
great.
isn't Christian, so
Exactly, and it's so great to see that. And when he tells Peter Vincent, you have to have faith, he just laughs at it. And I thought, oh my God, I never even thought about it. If you don't believe in it, what in the hell is that even going to do? Like, apparently
exactly.
nothing. And then
Yeah.
we get to see his familiar, who I always tried to figure out, well, what is this guy? Is he a ghoul? Is he a whatever? And you know,
Yeah.
and then it was like, oh, well, he's a familiar, so he, you know, eats bugs and he does all of the daytime stuff. And
Right.
when the special effects part where they actually shoot him and he turns into the goo and then all of the
Right.
dust falls out of him and he just crumbles, I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. Because you never see that. You never get to see what
Yeah.
happens to the people that work for them, and why
Right.
are they so strong, and what is the motive. And you know, then you think about stuff like Renfield, where they're eating bugs and that's why they're super strong and they can do all of this crap.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, to this day, even the special effect where they have the prosthetic with Amy with the huge mouth. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw that, I jumped out of my skin. It was so freaking creepy.
Well, and it's interesting too, because the special effects on that one with her mouth was they did it the best they could, but the special effects people weren't very satisfied with it. And so they were like, oh, well, it's barely going to be in the movie. And then not only is it, a centerpiece of the movie,
It's in the poster
but it
too,
was
right?
in the poster. Yeah, it became part of the marketing, like, so much. And so it's funny that just that little bit, turned out to be such a big hit
It was
in terms
terrifying.
of,
I mean,
yeah.
you know, you're used to seeing fangs, not like a shark mouth with rows of
Yeah.
teeth. That is terrifying to me.
Yeah. And it's
I
interesting. Okay. Go
go
ahead.
ahead.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
No, I was going to say it's interesting that both of these movies have a piece of mythology, part of the mythology in them. that is that if you kill the vampire, the head vampire or whatever like that, then you save anybody else who was turned by them.
Right, they go right back to normal. Oh my
They go back to
gosh.
normal. So I thought that was an interesting bit that that both of these movies share as well. So but yeah, no, I really like Fright Night. I think it's a fun movie. I like that it's kind of got this dual nature to it. It's got the throwback kind of Victorian Gothic trappings to it in part, but also is pushing things into the 80s. It's this clash more than anything. It's this clash of the old sensibilities, the old vampire stuff with the new. And I really like that in terms of like pulling it into the 80s,
Yeah, I agree
bringing it
with
into
you. It
modern times.
did a good job of mashing those two together and kind of ushering what we're now going to be perceiving vampires as. Because once again, there's a really funny tweet. I don't know who came up with it, but it was like, well, how come vampires are always rich? And then the joke was, well, if you've been alive since 1890 and you're still broke, just walk out into the sun, dude. So it's like, I love the fact that, he's got, very suave, attire. I mean, clearly these, when they kill people, they're getting the money or the jewelry or whatever. They always look very affluential. They're always very suave, just Jerry Dandridge was just so cool. There was just something so cool about Sarandon's performance in this. And then when we get to see what he really looks like, I was kind of like, wow, this is really scary and terrifying to see how really creepy he can be. And then also seeing Amy with that terrible shark mouth, I was just like, oh my God, this is not the vampire I want to be. This is not the cool kind. But I get it. I get it. But I do agree with you. It's a great meld of both old school and new school with this. And then we transition into what we're going to get not just 2 years later, like you said.
Well, and this was something that was interesting to me too, is that I'm not sure when this started, but with in terms of when they become more vampiric, that their physicality actually changes. Like with Jerry Dandridge, his face changes, his fingers get long. It's something that he can look normal, but whenever his more vampiric parts come out, that it changes his actual physical appearance. And you get that in both of these movies. And I'm not sure what movie started it. Like, I'm not sure if there was something before Fright Night that did that, or if Fright Night was the beginning of that. But that's
That is
something
a
that
good
goes
thing.
into, yeah, it's something that goes into. It influences movies in the future as well.
Yeah,
So
I think
you
the
get a lot
only
of that.
thing I can remember with vampires or just the transition in general is something like Christopher Lee and his eyes turning like blood red. That's about the extent of it,
But yeah, there was nothing like, and otherwise they were just like, oh, well, they have fangs and they still look basically normal. They didn't have that. I'm trying to remember. Didn't in Blackula his face change a little bit too?
His face did get a little wolfy. Yeah, I think Blackula was probably another one where we got to see a little bit more of the bat kind of appearance on his face. So yeah, that actually is pretty good. That'd probably be the other one.
My listeners are welcome to let me know of any other earlier versions of movies where the like face changes or something like that. So that would be interesting to find out. So, because I'm definitely nowhere near a vampire scholar of any sort. So, maybe I have to ask my friends over at Vampire Videos if they know. But yeah. So, I think we can transition into the Lost Boys now. This one is probably like this one is arguably the most famous and probably the best vampire movie of the 80s. I mean, Sure, everybody's going to have their preferences. But I think this one is the one that most people recognize. If you said vampire movie of the 80s, Lost Boys is going to be at the tip of everybody's tongue. Because again, it is what you think of, like just rewatching this. And I've rewatched it not too long before this, but just rewatching this the other night and everything. Just going through the very beginning segment when people are strange is playing. And you're just kind of getting a look at everybody in Santa Carla, that this was that moment in the 80s where the 80s aesthetic really solidified. And that's what we were talking about before, is that when we look back at the 80s, the clothing, the hair, everything that we think about the 80s is right here in there. And so I think that's it's interesting. And of course, it's California. So, California would have been kind of on the vanguard of that changing look, the way fashion and aesthetics would have been. So I just think that's it's fun to watch this movie and go back and go. And this movie, again, I did an episode of Voices from the Mausoleum. Five influential horror movies. And this one was one of my most influential, because it was something that I enjoyed a ton as a kid. I was 13 when this movie came out.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And so, seeing teenagers, seeing kids my age around that time. And of course, I got a black trench coat and I wore that, and which was not good, because in 87 I was living in Hawaii at the time. It
Man,
was
you were
hot.
sweating your
It
butt
was
off. Oh
hot.
my
Now, don't
God.
get me wrong, it was nice on the days where it would suddenly rain for 5 minutes, which happened a lot in Hawaii. It was just out of the blue, you'd have a nice hot day, nothing going on. I'd be sweltering in my black trench coat and all of a sudden it'd be raining, and I'm like, hey, you know what? This is actually nice this time. But
I can only
yeah.
imagine.
Yeah.
So I will tell you
Yeah.
my personal story about The Lost
Yes.
Boys. I know you said you were 13 when this came out. I was 16. I had just turned 16 and I was boy crazy already. I had already been boy crazy. So when a group of my girlfriends wanted to go see this, my uncle, who's I say he's my uncle, but he really is more like a sibling. He's only like 5 years older than me. He was like, okay, well, I will drop you girls off. I do not want to sit here and watch this movie while y'all are going on about boys every 5 minutes, which was a smart move.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to cough. So what happened was, I had to start it. What had happened was, when I went to this movie with the four other girlfriends of mine, they would not fucking shut up. And I was really into the movie. They were into the boys, which I also was into the boys, but I wanted to watch the fucking movie. So I
Right.
literally got up and left my girlfriends and went and sat by myself to actually enjoy the film. I was the pariah all night
This
because of
is
that.
just feels like peak Donna right here,
It really
just
was because I was getting so annoyed. I couldn't hear
yeah.
anything and I didn't know what was going on. And everybody, every 5 minutes, oh my God, he's so cute. Oh my God, he's so hot. And I thought, yes, he is, but could you
Like,
shut up for
shut up,
five
I want to
minutes?
hear the damn story.
Can I see where the story is going? So, yes, I left them 2 rows behind me just so I can go and watch this
That's
movie.
funny.
It was terrible. I don't think they talked to me for like a week, and I did not care because I was enjoying the hell out of the movie.
Yeah.
And so my uncle picked me up. I'm gonna make this as quick as possible, I swear, guys. When my uncle picked me up, he said, "How was the movie?" I said, "It was wonderful. It was the best thing. I'm going back again next weekend." And then my girlfriends were all quiet in the back. So after he dropped them off, he's like, "Did something happen?" I said, "Yeah, they wouldn't fucking shut up." I left them behind me. And he's like, "Yeah, that makes sense." Because at this point, I was already a serious movie watcher. My mom and I watched
Yeah.
movies all the time. So I was really focused on the plot and I wanted to know what was going to happen. And they couldn't get past everybody was so hot. And I just could. It was like sitting with four Paris Hiltons at that point. And I don't know
Oh my
why I was friends
gosh.
with these girls at this point in my life. But yeah, every other word was, oh, he's so hot. Oh, he's so hot. Oh, get away from me. And this is why Donna doesn't have that many female friends, and I usually vibe with guys. Just in case you guys wanted a backstory, but you didn't ask for it. But this movie was amazing. Okay, first of all, it starts out with People are Strange. I was already on a Doors kick, even though it wasn't the Doors version. I could not tell you how much I thought this movie was going to be the best thing, and it probably was my favorite movie that year. I think I probably watched it 100 times.
Oh
But
yeah,
it's
I
so,
know I've watched it a ton at the
yeah,
time as well.
and you're right, you know, the fashion, everything about the way the guys looked, their clothes, you know, I wanted to live in California because of this movie.
Yeah.
I probably would not have fared well at that age, but you know, it's just it's a really, really cool kind of look at, like you said, the 80s at that time. You know, we're already getting people wearing androgynous fashion. You know, they're wearing military fashion. You know, guys are wearing earrings, guys are having eyeliner. The hair is all punk, but kind of, you know, very fashionably punk. It's and once again, they all are looking like teenagers. You know, we have the two Coreys in their first movie, so
Yeah.
that already was a selling point. Jason Patrick, who not too many people knew, he was, you know, very cute, like young actor. We got Kiefer Sutherland in like one of his, you know, not first roles. I think he'd already been in Stand By Me at that point, but
Yes. Yeah, he'd been in Stand By Me before
yeah,
this.
but you know, clearly this was a breakout role for
Oh,
him.
yeah.
And just so many different people, and then we have a lot of people. Yeah, Alex Winter, who I had the biggest crush on, and all of my friends thought I was crazy because they were like, "Oh, he's not even that cute." And I'm like, "Yes, he is. Yes, he is." You know, maybe it's the eyes. I don't know. He's got like really big eyes. I have a thing
No,
for
he
big
had a
eyes.
great look in the in this movie too, because you know he had, you know, of course he had the mullet going on,
Right.
as did
Kiefer Sutherland,
Kiefer
yeah.
Sutherland's character. And the other guys had that like late 80s
Long
hairband
rocker
look.
hair, like they were in
Yeah.
Poison or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But whereas Kiefer Sutherland's character had the like the spikes up front and then the long hair in the back. Alex Winter's character had that like curly hair, which made him look so much more different and unique in a lot of
I
ways.
thought so too. Yeah, the
Yeah.
curly hair was really the way to
Yeah.
go with
And of
that
course,
guy.
Alex
And
Winter, you know, later on becomes is later on more famously in the Bill and Ted movies.
right,
So,
yeah, and
yeah.
he's in one of my all-time favorite movies that nobody has ever probably seen or will ever seen, called
Is it
Freaked.
Freaked?
And
Yeah.
I love that movie, and I have no reason to, and I know it's just because of him, but yeah, I love that whole feeling of this film. And plus, you know, there's a boardwalk, so there's all these shops, you know, comic shops, which you and I would be right at home.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a video
Especially
store.
in 87. Oh man, like that was just right as I was starting to get into comic books. I think I got into them more like right around that time period. 87, 88 is right when I
Right.
started getting heavily into comic books.
Yeah, so I mean, you know,
So,
all of the things that I love, like all of the beats hit, you know, the comic books,
yeah.
the video store, really cute guys. And I'm just, once again, now I'm older. I look at all of the homes in horror movies because that's the kind of, their grandfather's place was lit as shit. I mean, it was like a huge house. It was all wood. Like he made it himself. You know, he had a lot of
Yeah.
land. I'm like, how many acres does this man have? You know, they're going on about how they got to move in with, you know, their granddad. And I'm like, I want to live here with your granddad. I don't give a shit about you. Let me
I
live
don't
there.
know. They were kind of spot on with it being right out of Texas Chainsaw,
No, they were right on. They were spot on about that. Serious.
with his taxidermy. Oh man.
But I
Woo.
mean, it's great because this movie, we get to see finally young vampires, and what would young vampires do? You know, they hang out all night.
Yeah.
You know, the tagline, you know, I can't remember it, but it's like, you know,
Sleep
stay
all day.
young. Yeah, sleep all
Yeah.
day,
Party
party
all
all night.
night. Live
Like, who
forever.
wouldn't want
Yeah.
to be a vampire at that age? That's the perfect
Right?
age.
No, and that's what made this movie so much more fun than anything else we'd ever seen in terms of vampire stuff, is that vampire stuff was always about adults, or like, like in Fright Night, where it's teens going up against vampires,
Right.
like adult vampires. And so this was so unique because, like we said, you and I, we were teenagers right at that time. I was right about the same age as the Coreys, and you would have been right at the same age as the older kids.
Right.
And so having that like aspect of that, like just being like, oh my God, these vampires are our age, is like a much more relatable story. Even if we couldn't relate with being kids in California and stuff, but it was just so much more relatable to us and so much more interesting and fun than anything they'd ever done before. And Joel Schumacher just like, being real smart to tap into that. It was written by other people, but it was and it was originally supposed to be directed by Richard Donner.
I could see that. I could totally see that with Goonies and
So he,
whatnot.
Goonies, exactly. So he was going to direct it, but then he ended up, I guess, things happened that pushed things back, and then by the time it was he would have by the time filming needed to start happening on The Lost Boys, he was already doing the first Lethal Weapon, and so which came out the same year. And
Yeah,
so
my big selling point, and I know this is going to sound weird, and it probably won't, maybe. I always think it sounds weird in my head, but I love when teens are in peril, and now we have teens fighting unnatural teens. This is like the jam right here. I don't even know. There's no way you can dispute it, because of course adults aren't going to believe you. Except for, we find out later on in the movie, well, one of the adults had a inkling of it all along, but I love the fact that these teens, when he meets the Frog Brothers, they're just like, oh, you need to read Vampire Kill, all vampires must die. Well, I don't want to read horror comics. Well, no, it's a survival guide. These kids are clearly aware. Their parents look like burnouts. Every time we see their parents, they're, they look like they're either stoned or sleeping in the comic
We're
book store,
dead.
or dead. Very well could be. But I love the fact that we do have teens in peril, and they actually do what we normally see adults do, which is combat the evil. And they do it just like kids would do it. They're nervous, they're scared, they don't know what they're doing really, but they do end up conquering a lot of what they have to face. And the other thing, and I'm a big, I don't know why this always is in my head. I guess because I'm an only child. I love when we see siblings on screen. Honestly, Jason Patrick and Corey Haim, they really did come across as siblings. I really
Oh,
love the
definitely.
dynamic between the two of them. It's probably next to the recent Jordan Peele films. They're probably two of my favorite horror siblings that I've seen in a while, just because they didn't come across fake. They came across like they actually were brothers and they actually cared about each other. And that always makes me.
There's so many movies where the siblings just come off as like, how are you supposed to be
Yeah,
related?
you're
Because you guys are
clearly an
not.
actor, right?
So it's a, yeah, it's really nice when you can get that, where that you've got actors who like have enough chemistry together that they can act like brothers. Because
Right.
Jason Patrick and Corey Haim, they had that natural like antagonism to each other, but there was that definite respect and love underneath as
Right.
well. And you could feel that through the performances that, that Corey Haim's character, I can't remember the names now.
I can never remember his character's name.
He they whenever he's at first he's scared of his brother, but then like he's doing everything in his power to try to protect him and try to fix things and everything. And that's what's unique about it too, is it's like this, the little brother is really the hero trying to save his brother from
His
everything.
brother, yep, he
And
really
so
is, and it's weird too, because kind of just like Fright Night with the Lost Boys, you get that same kind of vampire trope, but you also not vampire trope, you get that whole that whole theme of sexuality, like Amy not wanting to be intimate and then becoming intimate with Jerry Dandridge. And then I love in this one how it The Lost Boys is basically like a metaphor for growing up. Like he's succumbing to peer pressure, but you know he doesn't realize he's going to become a vampire when he succumbs to the peer pressure. But you know it's all about him trying to figure out what he wants to become, and then now you've become this a part of this thing that you really shouldn't have done. You know, when they set him up with the whole food thing with the maggots and the worms, and then they let him drink the blood, they knew exactly what they were doing. And it was just another way to seduce him into, you know, as a teenager, you do dumb shit because you go into the peer pressure. And that's exactly what he did. He was like, oh, well, yeah, it's blood. It's blood. You know, Star tells him point blank, that's blood. Don't drink it. And at this point, he's just like, yeah, right, it's blood, and drinks it. And I thought, dude, what reason would she have to lie to you? She just met you. Like, you just met this girl. But because he's a teenager, you don't want to be a wuss in front of these guys. You want to show that you're as
Well, and
cool as
because they'd
everybody
already
else.
messed with him, trying to make him think the food was maggots and worms, you know.
Exactly.
And so, you know, when you know, then he's set up and he's like, oh yeah, no, it's blood. No, it's not blood. Shut up. You just messing with me again. You know, so it's like, I get it. Like that would be, I'd just be like, whatever, you stop it. You're annoying
Yeah,
me.
exactly. And
But
then we get that great scene too of his mom trying to talk to him, and he's coming in and he's got the shades on because now he's starting to feel the effects. And it seems like he's just going through some teenage bullshit, but he really
the
is.
teenage angst,
Yeah, but he's a vamp he, lady, he's a vampire. He's trying to work this shit out. You got to give him a minute. So I love that whole aspect of it too. It's like it just seems like he's just a bratty ass teenager, but really he's trying to figure out how he can, you know, quench this thirst, not eat people in his family, turn himself back to normal. The whole head vampire thing, like you said in the other and Fright Night, you know, we get that whole if we kill the head vampire, then that's the end of it. I love the whole comic, the comedic scene of the Frog Brothers, and it's Sam. Sam is Corey Haim's character. I don't know why that popped in my head, but when they're trying to test Max to see if he's the head vampire, because you know they kind of put together, oh, well, he works at a video store late at night, and he's got a dog that protects him during the day, and you know we never see him during the daytime, and like, so he must be the head vampire. And then that whole comedic scene of them trying to give him garlic and pour holy water on him, and you know it's hilarious, and it's all for us. But I can never take Max seriously because I've seen him on Gilmore Girls as the nice
As
granddad.
the
So I can't. No, I didn't. He wasn't on Gilmore Girls then, but now, you know, going back and watching it, that's all I think of. It's like I cannot take him seriously.
Well,
But
and that's what's interesting about it too, is that like through the movie, you're not supposed to take him seriously. He doesn't come off as a threat.
no.
He doesn't come off as the big bad guy. You know, even like whenever he's in, like he's, you see, there's a moment where all of a sudden all the David and his group are like out and around him with their motorcycles and being all weird and
Right.
crazy and everything like that. He doesn't get this like look of like annoyance or, you know, whatever you would as the
No,
actual
he just
head
looks
vampire.
terrified.
He looks scared. And so it's interesting to see that played like that because it does throw you off as the audience. You're just supposed to
Yeah,
go, well,
clearly
who
that's
is
for
the?
us. Yeah, because I mean, and he's so nice. He's just like Diane Weiss, you know, very soft spoken, you know, kind of goofy. And I would never in a billion years think that he would be the head of all of these vampires. I don't know. I really love this one, and we get a lot of, like I said, the guys are good looking, and I keep forgetting to mention that Jason Patrick, his dad is in The
The
Exorcist. I
Exorcist.
keep forgetting that that he comes from a acting family in general. So yeah, it was nice to see somebody
All
that I
these damn
didn't
Nepo
know.
babies.
I know. Nepo babies, I love that. But then you get, once again, like we said, we get the two Corys together in their first movie, which obviously spawned like two or three more movies with them.
Well, they did like nine movies altogether, but only really two, I would say, big ones, License to Drive and Dream a
License to
Little
Drive.
Dream.
Yeah, I actually like Dream a Little Dream. I'm not even gonna get into that. I was a Corey Feldman person. I knew there was always somebody that wanted one or the other, and I just from the Goonies on, I just always liked Corey Feldman. I don't know.
I always liked him better, yeah, for sure, than I did like Corey Haim. But I did like Corey Haim, in certain things. I thought he was good in this. I thought he was good in Lucas. But
Oh yeah, Lucas
yeah,
is such
and
a
in
good movie.
Silver Bullet, of course. But yeah, no, it's this movie's a lot of fun. I think that, it's for everything that we've mentioned. I think it's interesting. There's not So one of the things I do want to talk about is that there's not a lot of sexuality in this movie, but there's a lot of homoerotic undertones
Oh,
that
yes.
I didn't notice back then because I didn't pick up on it. It wasn't something on my radar, but it's something that people have talked about since then, and myself becoming more aware of those kind of things, and the fact that I also know that the director Joel Schumacher
Joel
is a gay man.
Schumacher's gay, yeah.
That yeah, that it this you see it now more than before. Like going back and watching it, the last few times I've watched it, I was like, oh, okay, I see it. There is this undercurrent of stuff there. There's like, Sam's character has like pictures of like, a hot Rob Lowe on his door or
Right,
on
with
his
the
closet
mid-room,
door.
right?
Yeah. And it was like, as a boy, I was like, dude, like I didn't have guys on my wall. So like, like I said, I had Elvira on my wall.
Always took it as two ways, though, because
Yeah.
he also had a poster of Molly Ringwald, and then I felt
True.
like
Yeah.
because they moved from Phoenix, I felt like Sam was probably more fashionable. Like if you know when he
Yes.
went
And
to
I think that
the
was
comic
more
book
of it. You,
store.
yeah.
Yeah, when
I
he
think
went
that
to the
was
comic
probably
store,
more
he
of
was
what you
kind
were
of dressed
meant to think. Yeah.
right. He was
Sorry, go
dressed
ahead.
more like upscale, like the Frog Brothers are wearing like t-shirts and jeans and headbands,
Camo
and
and
he's
everything. Yeah.
yeah, and he's got like a full-on duster and very colorful
Yeah.
clothes. And I also feel like their mom seems like very much a hippie, and so she probably was fine
Yeah.
with her boys doing whatever, like not having any kind of gender specific thing, like you
Yeah.
can't wear this or you can't wear that.
Well, and again,
She,
that also played into what the 80s was like as well, too. The
right.
80s,
People were
that
very
fashion.
androgynous,
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
especially like Rob Lowe. I mean, Rob Lowe is a good looking man, but I mean, he's kind of pretty. So,
Yeah, yeah.
that's kind of how it was. And I did feel after I realized, of course, not at the time because I didn't know who Joel Schumacher was or that he was
Yeah,
gay.
exactly.
But then when you think about it, a lot of stuff does come across that way, because especially in the scene where they're riding their BMX bikes to the church to get the holy water, and Sam's bike is pink, and I was like,
Yeah.
that's an interesting choice for a boy's
Yeah.
bike. But once again, I
Well,
think it's just because he likes color. That's just who this kid is. You know what I mean?
yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is I think that, it was more about that he was just himself. He didn't care about that kind of aspect. He wasn't trying to hold to that necessarily that masculine gender role.
Yeah, I
And I
think he was
think that,
more fashion conscious, I think,
yeah.
as a teen. Some kids are. Like, I went to school with a guy who he dressed kind of like Charlie Brewster. His mom didn't make him dress that way. He just liked to look good when he
Right.
came to school. And I was like, okay, but you're not going to church. I mean, why are you dressed like this? But he liked being impeccably dressed. Maybe just that was Sam's way of, as a teen, maybe that was his way of rebelling. Instead of just wearing what everybody else wore, maybe he just wanted to be more fashionable, and like how Rob Lowe and all of these other movie stars were. Maybe that's why he dressed the way he did. I wouldn't put so much of the gay label on it as he was just like a trendsetter. You know what I mean?
Right.
If that
No,
makes sense.
and I think that's only part of it. I think that's where people can see it, but like that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it was meant to be. I think it's one of
Right.
those ideas that it could have been taken that way. And again, I think that's how it's, I think overall it can be played either way. You can see it as queer subtext with that, and especially in regards to the relationship between David and Michael as well.
Yeah,
There
no,
is
that's one
a,
I feel like if they remade that now, I think they would totally be together. I think that would not even be a question. 'Cause
Star wouldn't be as much in the picture.
no.
Yeah, it would have been more, and because vampirism, like vampire stuff, has always had a queer aspect to it as well, because there are men biting men, and
Yeah.
stuff, and so there
I
is
mean, the
this,
whole thing is erotic. There's an eroticism to it to begin with. I don't
exactly.
think gender and all of the sexuality and labor, none of that applies to a vampire because essentially they're a monster and they want to feed. That they're not discerning about who they feed upon. That doesn't make a difference to them. So
Yeah.
I do agree with you with at least with Joel Schumacher. I'm sure, there's no coincidence that these guys are extremely good looking. I mean, that
Yeah.
they're together and extremely good looking. I think Billy Wirth might have been a model at one point. I don't remember whether the other blonde gentleman, not Alex Winter, but I don't remember if he was a model, but I know Billy Wirth was. Like, he's always been
Brooke
in
McCarter.
fashion shows and stuff. So I mean, you definitely there is a sexual component there, especially between the two guys,
Right.
And certain things that they say, when they're about to fight each other, it's like, okay, this is really intense.
Yeah.
Like, are you gonna kiss
No,
him?
and
'Cause I'm ready for it.
yeah,
I'm
no, and
all
that's
here
what's
for
interesting.
it.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about it too, is that you can watch it in these multiple ways, that if you are wanting it for that queer aspect of it, it's there. If you don't have to watch it that way. You can enjoy it
Right.
just the way it is, just the surface level of it. But I think that's what's fun about this movie especially, and about vampire movies in general, that you can have these multiple readings of it depending on your own perceptions.
Yeah, and I
And
think
so,
it helps. I mean,
yeah.
let's be honest, horror, we have a horror is filled with queer characters. I mean, it's just a ton
Absolutely.
of them. So I think if he did mean to do it on a literal level or just, as a tongue in cheek, either way, if you're a queer identifying person, this movie has got to be one of your favorites. I mean, just
Yeah.
because you're seen in so many different ways, even if that wasn't intentional, it may have been his subconscious doing all of these things, but also making it friendly enough for heterosexual audiences to like really get into it, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie from top to bottom just because you have a divorced mom, you're looking at it from that angle. You've
Right.
got vampires who are very young and hip and I really wish we had gotten a little bit more backstory about each of the vampires,
Yeah.
like how old they were.
Yeah.
Like in Near Dark, they make the quip that Jesse fought for the South. I really would like to know what timelines these different vampires came from. Because when we see Laddie, him and Star, they clearly haven't been vampires that long. Laddie was on the back of the little milk carton, but
Yeah.
he's wearing like Civil War jackets, which,
Yeah.
obviously it's the 80s. We're picking up stuff from thrift stores. We don't, we're just wearing
You're right.
whatever looks cool. I will say, how did we forget to talk about the way that Jamie Gertz says Star? Every time she says her name, I want to throttle her. When he asks her, and she's like, Star. And I'm like,
Star.
who says their
Yeah.
name like that? Maybe it was just
Somebody
me.
whose name is Star. That's how they. If your name is Star, you're going to say your name is as fancy as possible. It's
And as much
Star.
as I love Jamie Gertz, not for one minute that I believe that her and Michael had any kind of romantic entanglement, engagement, attraction, any of that. None of that came across to me. I just.
I got it from his perspective. He seemed to be drawn into her, but she was very disaffected, like came off as disaffected to me anyway.
I feel like if they didn't have her in the movie, I wouldn't miss her.
No, because she's barely part of it. She's they do have a brief moment of like I guess there is a sexual moment between them. But but yeah, it comes off very like perfunctory, and not very romantic at
No,
all.
not at all. It's like she's the B plot, and the real relationship is between him and David.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I just have
And
more fun watching them.
yeah, and I think that's that's intentional as well too. She's meant to be the guide into him becoming pulled into David's orbit. And that's her sole function in that movie as well. So which is fine, because that's what you want to see anyway. You want to
Yeah.
see him get pulled into this and have to then fight his way out and everything.
I
I
will
did
say,
like,
oh,
oh,
go
go
ahead.
ahead.
No,
No,
you go
you
ahead.
go first. You go first.
I was going to say, I will say, I do like the fact that we got to see that the this group of vampire guys, that they sleep upside down like bats and not in coffins. It was very cute. I
Yeah. It
thought that that
was an
was
interesting twist. Yeah.
yeah, you never get to see that. And I also have to say, they do sparkle. Their blood was kind of glittery. I know people are like, oh, vampires aren't supposed to sparkle, but their blood is pretty glittery. So I guess they do sparkle a little bit.
Yeah,
But that was neat.
their eyes did as well too. They specifically, I was reading up on that they put glitter in the blood, and they put glitter into into their contacts and everything like that to give them that other
Vampires,
world quality. Yeah.
they do sparkle in this one too.
A
Even
little
though we
bit.
like to trip off of Twilight, they did a little in this one. But it's really neat. All of the weapons, before we had From Dusk Till Dawn, we get to see all of the holy water and the garlic and the garlic, the holy water and I'm losing my mind, the water guns, when he's spraying the vampire. And then obviously my favorite, Death by Stereo. That's probably one of my favorite kills ever. But little things like that, the antlers, we get to see antlers before we saw Get Out. People using antlers as weapons. And the
Well,
grandfather.
we did previously see antlers used as a weapon in the first Silent Night movie, Silent Night, Deadly
Against a
Night movie.
vampire. I'll
Oh,
say that.
true, true,
I'll
true.
put
Oh,
that
yeah, but
little
you
thing
said Get
against a
Out, so
vampire.
that's why I was
I did
saying,
say Get Out.
like,
I did say, I should have put the
don't
asterisk
try to
against a
trip me up.
vampire. No, I'm not, I swear. You caught me. I completely forgot about
I
that
did.
when poor Linnea Quigley going up on the antlers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I in the va and then their
I
granddad,
know you
who
like your unusual weapons, so.
I love them. They're so great. I mean,
No,
all
I
of them
do
are
too.
unusual, but man, I was the Death by Stereo just kills me because he's so cheesy. You gotta have a cheesy line when you kill him, and he came with one,
No, and
But
it was really cool too, because he's like, he missed the first time,
you
and
missed.
you missed, and he's like, only once, and then he like got him, and I was like, okay, that was definitely some 80s level action cheese right there, only
Was
once.
very cool. I actually, every time Billy Worth gets up and says the "you miss, sucker," I always laugh every time because he's like so serious. But that "sucker" just does not sound right. It just came out so wrong. And that's why they needed a black vampire. But then they would have,
Yes.
I don't know what they would have
See.
given him, like a MC Hammer fade or something. It would have been terrible. It would have been terrible. Maybe not.
Maybe some dreads.
Ooh, that would have been nice. No, in the 80s, it
Yeah.
would have been a Jerry curl. It wouldn't have been dreads. It would have been
Oh
something
yeah, you're
terrible.
right. It would have been like that
Like a
Eric
Bobby
Lasalle
Brown
Jerry
haircut or
curl from
something.
Coming to
Yeah, it wouldn't have
America.
been good. It would have been terrible. So maybe not. We did get a black character in this movie, though. Kelly Jo Minter is in this movie for
Yes,
all of 10
barely.
seconds in the video
Yes.
store, but
Well,
that's okay.
she apparently had a much bigger part, and it got cut, because she is actually credited in the beginning of the movie, even though you only see her over Diane Weiss' shoulder. So it's interesting that she gets full credit while barely being in the movie.
I
So
know, but I do love her. I was glad to see her, even for that little blip. And then Granddad, we get the reveal. Granddad knew about the vampires all along, which
So there's a theory about that too. So go ahead.
no, tell me the theory. I don't know this.
So there's a theory that he's a half vampire as well.
Shut it.
Yeah, because you don't see, because he can walk around in the day. But you know, he seemed to know a lot about what was going on, and you know, that he was ingesting the blood of the animals that he was using for his taxidermy.
You know, that is a solid theory.
Right?
I didn't even
I like that
think
theory.
about that.
And I did like the aspect that they bring into this movie of half vampires, vampires who haven't ingested human blood, so they don't become
Become full.
full vampires yet. So they can still walk around in the sunlight. They can still do what, you know, they kind of have all the power, but none of the they're basically kind of like Blade, the Daywalker, you know, all the power, none of
None of the side
the
effects.
weaknesses.
Wow. I never heard that theory about the granddad before. That's actually kind of cool.
And it would make sense, you know, of him, reason why he knew so much about the vampires by the end and stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, I like that. I always like a good theory like that. Those are always fun.
Yeah, now
So
that's going to be rattling around in my brain because
now
I
you're gonna have
never
to
thought about it.
rewatch it again with that in context and go,
I think so. Yeah, very much so. And then, of course, you know, we have this movie, and then this movie is referenced in Us because they said they're filming the vampire film at the Santa Cruz Boardwalk. I thought that was kind of cool. Clearly, Jordan Peele's a fan of this film, as we all are. I don't know what else can we say about this other than it had a rocking soundtrack.
Yeah, no, like this got a great soundtrack. You get Tim Capello rocking on his sax in the movie.
Oh,
It's
shirt, listen, oiled up.
yeah.
Once again, might be a Joel Schumacher thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
And he's so sweet. You know, he does cameos now. Like you can hire him
Yeah.
to say that,
Wait.
play that song. And
And he does the saxophone on one of my favorite more recent songs, Gunship's Dark All Day.
does he really?
He does. Yeah.
Oh,
He's the
wow.
saxophonist on that one. So, and that one I love that song because it's also used in the movie Revealer. So
Okay, I'm gonna have to check this out.
yes.
Sorry, now you got me going to all kind of places. Thank you. Thank you for that,
You're
Robert.
welcome.
But yeah, I mean, this is a great capsule in time. I know now I'm thinking I didn't dress up for Halloween this year, so now I'm thinking I might have to dress up as one of the Lost Boys. And I
Oh, I
love that
definitely did.
title.
I definitely did. At least a couple of times I was dressed up, just, you know, give myself some fake blood and just some fangs and just put on my my black trench coat that I had. And just, you know, yep, I'm a lost boy.
Oh my God. If you have pictures, I must see these pictures.
I
Ah.
don't, unfortunately. I do have a picture from a few years ago that I got taken with Kiefer Sutherland and Jason Patrick, though, at a convention. So
Okay,
I'll
so
have to
you'll have
put
to
that up.
post that when you post it.
Yeah.
When you put this up, you'll have to post that picture because I
Yes,
need to see that.
definitely. But yeah, no, it's definitely, this one was hugely influential to me in more ways than, you know, I wasn't huge into horror back then as a kid. I liked horror movies, you know, who didn't really, especially in the 80s. I mean, I
Right.
watched as much as I could, but I wouldn't say I was a huge horror kid. You know, I've always been more of a more comic book obsessed until, you know, the most recent years, and then I've been just really going back into horror super heavy. But it's, you know, this was always one that I really was attracted to. I really enjoyed it a lot at the time, and have loved ever since.
Yeah, I think I have too, simply because, you know, of the reasons we stated before. I saw it when I was a teenager. I'd never seen teenage vampires. I've never seen teens in peril, you know, trying to fight against using the tropes that we all know, holy water, garlic, stakes, those kind of things. And then, you know, I immediately went out and bought the soundtrack. I think I bought the VHS. I bought every poster, every magazine that had them in it. I was obsessed with it for quite a while. But it was just really nice too to see at this time Kiefer Sutherland, who
Yeah.
I didn't really know much about, and played such a great villain. And all of the people in this and were great. Diane Weiss was great.
Yeah.
It's a great cast. It's a lot of fun. I really like seeing vampires from this angle. And it
Yeah.
definitely is one of my all-time favorites. I think it will always be one of my all-time favorites.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's a, and it is interesting too, because we don't get very much, we still don't get very much in terms of teen vampires. You get it once in a while, but you'd think that after the Lost Boys, we'd have gotten a lot more of it. But we really
Yeah.
didn't get that much of it, you know, in the 90s. And I'll be going into this in my next episode as well. I mean, we got throwbacks, really. We got Bram Stoker's Dracula, and we got Interview with the Vampire. You know, so it's just a few short years later, that's what we got. We didn't, not even 10 years later, we're back to kind of the original
The
tropes again
same,
and everything
right.
like that. You know, we didn't really, and don't get me wrong, we did have more modern takes of stuff like that. We get Blade later on in the 90s, and you know, throughout the 90s we got
But
different
they're few and far in
stuff,
between. This
but they are, you
one,
know.
yeah.
Yeah, so this one, you know, these two plus Near Dark, I think, were really those that really pushed vampires into the 80s, into modern times, and you know, we got more of a fun, unique perspective on vampires that we hadn't gotten in previous decades.
Oh, and it's funny
You
you
know.
said Near Dark, and that's another one that roped in with this one where they actually cure the vampires. I
Yeah.
completely
Yeah.
forgot about that until you said Near Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely, all of the heartthrob stuff aside, I just think it's a really clever
Yeah.
movie. It doesn't miss a beat. The kids are depicted as kids. They're not depicted as, adults,
Yeah.
adult child actors. They get scared, they lose their complete shit. They don't know what the hell they're doing. And they figure it out. And once again, it's that family love, that whole sibling dynamic. I it's one of my favorite ones. Top
Right.
tier, up there. That one, Night of the Comet, recently, Nope, and Us.
Yeah.
I love when siblings are just, they just feel like they click and they feel authentic. And the two of them is probably my best sibling duo. So absolutely
Yeah,
enjoyed this one.
absolutely. Yeah, same. Yeah, it's definitely one of my all-time favorites, and will always be one of my favorites. So, yeah. All right. I think I'm done, you know, with this one. Do you have anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap it up?
No, I think we summed up everything. We didn't prattle on too well like we like to. But yeah, I mean, any you know me, anytime you want to talk about any that I've seen, I will always come back to your neck of the
Absolutely.
woods. And I'm excited to see what else you're going to talk about on your vampire series. I am excited.
Yeah. Well, why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
So I'll say Discord, but I'm never there. I am on Twitter. I really am mostly on Instagram, and I have my own podcast as well. Donna underscore THA underscore dead. So Donna the Dead, and you can come and listen to me. And but I'm mostly here at Robert's, so you can always find me here too.
Yeah, definitely go check out her podcast, because she just you know, she you know, by the time this comes out, we're in December, but she just did a whole series on in October, for the month of October. She did Blacktober, a whole bunch of black horror movies, which is really cool. So go check that out. Go check out all of her episodes, because they're a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks, Robert.
Yeah. So yeah, but that's all we got for today. And thanks again for coming on. I always appreciate you coming and joining me here.
Yeah, I'll come whenever you come a knocking.
All right. We'll have you on again very soon. Thanks again to Donna for joining me. On Friday, Katrina returns to the show to talk about Captain Marvel. And on Monday, Angel Krauss returns to the show to talk about vampire movies that later became TV shows, with Buffy the Vampire Slayer and What We Do in the Shadows. Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Jerry Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Blue Sky, and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.